Again, Medical Education Podcast listeners, this is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you from a Vancouver day where spring has absolutely sprung. It is glorious 15 degrees and blue skies, so spirits are high here on the West Coast. I'll be speaking with a colleague from further east, though, near where I understand they've had some continued rough end-of-winter weather in Ontario. Michael Ott is the name of the individual you're going to hear momentarily. He's assistant professor in the Department of Surgery and program director in general surgery training at the Schulich School of Medicine and Dentistry at Western University. Michael, thanks for taking the time out of your clinical day to chat with me.
I'm more than happy to. Thanks for asking me to be involved.
I should also mention that the paper we'll be talking about is called Resident Hesitation in the Operating Room, Does Uncertainty Equal Incompetence? And I understand it is a paper that deserves congratulations for more than one reason, but one of them being that it's the culmination of the efforts that you're making for your master's through University of Illinois at Chicago.
Yes, it was part of the master's degree work that I did for the MHPE program there, and very proud of the work I did and the help that I've had from some of my co-authors.
Yeah, no, it's clearly work to be proud of, and great to see that you've had this accomplishment. Resident hesitation in the operating room. Maybe the best place to start is to clarify for the people listening what type of hesitation you were interested in. Does this mean within a procedure you were interested in what people do when they hesitate to continue, or is it hesitation to even take on particular procedures?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So the work really came organically from my experience as an educator in the operating room. I'm a surgeon and I work in the operating room. And what I noticed was that periodically during surgical procedures, and that can be actually very simple things to very complex things, independent sometimes of the level of training or the knowledge that individuals had about the procedures or the cases, there would be aspects or times where residents just seemed to not be able to move forward. Either they were stumped or blocked, or at the time I had no real idea what was going on, but people that I felt that I had worked with quite well and knew quite well and should perform well in certain situations just seem to stall. And so my thought process around that really was to try and figure out, well, what's actually happening there? Why is it happening? And is there something I can be doing better as a teacher in the operating room to make it not happen? It was really how the idea came about. It changed and moved, as most good research questions do, along the way, but that was the real genesis of it. It was a real life situation and saying, what's going on in the residents' minds during that process.
And you specify in particular that it's hesitation that was triggered by uncertainty that you were interested in. What sort of things did you have to do to tease apart some of the hesitant moments that might have been triggered by uncertainty versus something else?
That's a really good question. We tried to focus our exploration of what was going on in our observations in operations with residents that were of sufficient levels of training where they wouldn't have been making mistakes or have concerns about technical things. So we were talking about relatively senior residents that wouldn't have been concerned about technical functioning or movements or other things, but more around decision making, because my interest was more about when we got to certain points in procedures when potentially judgments need to be made to do something. That's where things were falling apart. So it's not a pure technical thing. It was more about how people were judging to move forward. And so we observed real life surgeries, and then we discussed both the resident and the consultants in the room at the time what their perspectives were on moments that we saw during procedures. And that's kind of how the initial idea came about, to explore what was going on in those moments.
And it's actually that dyadic exploration that really separates this in my mind from some similar questions that have been asked, in that while that moment of uncertainty appears to have been an interest, your priority in this particular project, if I've understood correctly, is more around how are those moments being interpreted and how are they impacting upon the supervisor-trainee relationship. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I would say that's very fair. I mean, to be very honest, in the beginning, with the bare bones of when this started, my thought process was there must be something wrong with the resident. What's going on in their brain? Is it a cognitive overload thing? Is there a lack of understanding? Is it fear of making a mistake? What is the issue? What's wrong with these residents, and how can I make them progress? But as we spent time exploring the relationship because we wanted to get the perspective of not only the learner in that situation, but also the teacher. And it became very clear to me that there was a really kind of dynamic relationship in that moment. It wasn't that there was a resident problem. And in a lot of cases, I would argue that it was both a learner and a teacher problem, and sort of a mismatch in that situation of understanding what that signal meant. So we were kind of exploring a signal that was occurring during operative cases and how the two different parties that are engaged in that teaching moment interpret that signal and how do they move forward once that's occurred. Because there's a variety of ways that we found that they did, which is some of the latter work we hope to eventually publish around this. But really the piece that you're talking about was trying to define, well, what does hesitation mean in the minds of the two people in the operating room?
And as you're observing these interactions, first of all, maybe I should just say quickly that you actually watched these interactions take place and then interviewed both the trainees and the supervisors about them. One of the central concepts to try to better understand what was going on that you drew upon is this notion of progressive autonomy. I think I need to ask you to explain and elaborate on that for any of our listeners who haven't really thought about the concept before.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the idea as you're teaching surgery is there's a couple of unique things about that experience in the clinical world. So number one is that, as we described in the paper, that the individuals, both the teacher and learner, are there at the same time engaging in the same process, and there's often a give and take as the procedure is progressing depending on the level of the resident's training. Some parts of it they do, some parts of it they're guided through, some parts of it they don't do. And there's always this movement forward, if you will, in surgery, particularly in the operating room, of this almost kind of dance or relationship between a teacher and learner. The idea being that we're slowly trying to give away autonomy to learners in the operating room as they're getting to the point of requiring that. And there's always this judgment as to, is someone ready to do something or not ready to do something? And how much do you loosen the reins to let them go ahead versus rein them in and guide them through things? And it's a unique learning environment. I think it's seen in a lot of other areas too, potentially, but I think the operating room is a very unique learning environment where everything is kind of intensified and everyone that's involved in that relationship is there, and time is a very important commodity, and all these things kind of, if you will, heighten some of the relationships that you may see in other domains of medical education and teaching and postgraduate education. But we kind of coined the idea that this is like a crucible, if you will, in the operating room, where everything kind of comes together in a short period of time, and both the learner and teacher need to make fairly quick decisions about judging each other where they're at. The surprising thing to us and to me is how little communication is occurring about that relationship, and it's just almost kind of like moving forward on its own. But the concept is really to progressively improve individuals' autonomy, because at the end of the day, they need to be able to function within the operating room on their own. Yet they really are almost, at least in North America and Canada right now, never really truly autonomous in their training programs. But the idea is that we're slowly releasing, if you will, the leadership of doing the procedure to residents as they're crossing those thresholds of being capable of doing it. And there's a lot of negotiation that goes in that process of releasing them.
And it's a dance back and forth that you're describing that I think makes it very clear why these moments of hesitation you described could be, you know, very informative moments, whether accurately or inaccurately. And the speed with which you described, you felt yourself jumping to conclusions about what hesitation meant, is case in point. As you talked to your participants, did anything surprise you in terms of the variety of ways in which other people were drawing inferences from those moments of hesitation?
I think that in discussion with most of the teachers, I wasn't super surprised, to be honest, with regards to some of their descriptions of what they thought that meant, because I think that in my process of being a teacher, some of those things have crossed my mind as well. And to be honest, as faculty sit around and talk about residents for training or operations they've done with residents, this is kind of a phenomenon that is described, if you will, kind of just amongst each other in a discussion, even though there wasn't really any sort of meat to what it meant. I was a bit surprised sometimes how some of my colleagues would respond to that particular moment and what they felt that that represented and what they meant to do about that. And I think at times they may have misinterpreted it. One of the things I thought was incredibly interesting to me was the residents' perspective and some of the things that they would do, if you will, to try and mask that particular event from occurring. And again, we don't spend that much time dwelling on it in this particular paper, but one of the things that I thought was quite interesting about it was how everyone seemed to recognize what was going on in that particular moment. However, there was quite a variety of how people would interpret that. And then there was quite a variety of things people would do in that situation to almost kind of negate the slowing down or stopping of the procedure, which we talk a little bit more in, hopefully in a later paper. But that was surprising to me, to be honest, some of those insights.
And that it's almost a deliberate or aware process of people trying to hide their hesitation. Is that a source for concern or for action that you think the education or surgery in particular needs to attend to as we continue to think about educational practices and patient safety issues?
Yeah, I think it's really important. I really do, because I don't think it's just applicable to surgery. I think it's applicable to any kind of high-stakes learning environment where both a teacher and a learner are involved, in which things are moving at a relatively rapid pace, and there may not be a whole lot of time to kind of sit and think or talk about it. I think of, you know, the emergency department, ICUs, obviously in surgery and other kind of technical specialties like that. And the thing that I think is most important about it is that, for example, I mean, I do tertiary level colorectal cancer type surgery. I do some very prolonged procedures that have, you know, 4 or 5 hours in the operating room and so forth. That 4 or 5 hours, there may be one moment within that 4 or 5 hours of 10 minutes where if I just notice this little moment and spend a little extra time kind of, if you will, making what's going on in my head conscious to the learner that's with me, that whole 10 minutes may be the most valuable time of that 5 hours. And the 2.5 hours before that 10 minutes and the 2.5 hours after that 10 minutes, they may not be learning anything. But that 10 minutes that we stop and just talk about, okay, in this situation, I'm seeing this. What are you seeing? How are you going to deal with this when they're kind of not progressing or moving forward is probably the most valuable thing they're going to learn in that whole 5 hours. And if I miss that moment by not recognizing what's going on, then I may have spent that 5 hours with them and they've learned nothing. And I've not advanced them in any way, shape, or form to progress to being able to do these kinds of things independently. And so I think there's a lot of importance to individuals as they work, particularly in postgrad or maybe even undergrad education, where if a moment is misinterpreted, then a very valuable teaching moment may be lost. And so I think that was the take-home message for me, and what I try and talk to colleagues about is that there's a lot of stuff we do every day in clinical teaching which probably doesn't advance individuals' autonomy or learning. But there are some very key special moments where we can have very high impact. And I think this particular signal or phenomena that we see in the operating room is that moment. And recognizing it for what it is and actually dedicating a little extra time to that particular moment will advance people beyond where they are currently in their training and make them better. And if you miss it, it's gone. It's gone forever and they may never get it back. And I don't think it's as valuable if you don't spend that few minutes in that moment, as opposed to, for example, debriefing after. While that's, I think, very valuable, to stop in that moment, recognize what it is, and spend a few extra minutes, I think is highly valuable. And at least in my opinion, probably the most important part of that interaction that day.
Well, and given that you've spent a lot more time deliberately reflecting on those moments than I suspect most people have, as my final question, let me just ask if you have any particular thoughts or suggestions for how people might be more aware of when those moments arise, and also if you've developed any particular strategies yourself for trying to better understand what hesitation means.
I think for me, the first thing that I think is to try and, if you will, guard against the knee-jerk reaction. This resident isn't progressing, so they obviously don't know what they're doing. And I think that a lot of us, depending on how clinically busy you are, that's a tough thing to sometimes put in the back of your mind, because that is often, I would say, at least my impression is in talking to colleagues, that is the first instinct that comes to mind. they're stopping, it's because they don't know what they're doing. And that may be true, but I think that that negative connotation of, okay, well, now I just better do it because they don't know what they're doing, again, I think results in a loss of a very valuable teaching moment. So I think that's the first piece, to make sure that you recognize what it is and try and put away those preconceived notions of what you think it means. And then the other thing that I've been really dwelling a lot on is trying to kind of make the unconscious conscious, if you will. So there's a lot of things that I do which are unconscious competence, just because I've been doing it for more than a decade now, and I'm really good at what I do, and I do a very selected kind of specialty practice. But there's a lot of things that I do that aren't obvious to those that are learning from me. And so to spend that time to really try and, if you will, unpack what my mind is thinking as I'm doing something, to then express that to the individual that I'm working with. And in surgery, in some ways that's easier, because one of the questions that I often will ask residents is, what are you seeing right now? And I don't mean the specifics of what the anatomy looks like or some specific thing, but, you know, when I'm asking them what are they seeing, I clarify, like, what direction do you think this is moving? What's the next move that you're doing? How is this anatomy informing you as to what you can or can't do in this particular situation? And then to try and have a discussion about what I am seeing, because there's often some incongruency there. They're saying, well, I think I should do this or see this or that. And I say, well, this is what I see, and this is why I see this, and this is how I'm interpreting these signals, which are a combination of visual and tactile and otherwise, and my experience and how this is created. And so I think those are the three main ways that this has kind of informed my teaching. It's, again, trying to put away my bias of, well, this person doesn't know what they're doing, and I need to just not waste time with them, which I think is a hard thing to sometimes get around, particularly in a very high-paced clinical environment. And the second thing is to recognize that there are things that I'm doing that they don't see. Again, trying to unpack that unconscious and make it conscious to them as to what I'm doing, the competence. Mm-hmm. And then the third thing is to really spend a few minutes and just say, what is it you're seeing? What are you thinking right now? And then to really try and express as clearly as I can what I'm seeing and thinking. If you wait, almost share the idea of what we're thinking together about this particular situation at this particular moment. And I think that's really, hopefully, how I can create, if you will, a step ladder to people moving beyond where they're at currently in their level of competence, by sharing some of that recognition or exposure or ideas that they haven't really perceived at that very moment.
And thank you for sharing those insights, both in this format and in the journal article. I'll close by reminding our listeners that they can find more detail about what we've just been discussing in the August 2018 issue of Medical Education. The paper's titled Resident Hesitation in the Operating Room, Does Uncertainty Equal Incompetence? And Michael Ott is the first author. Thank you, Michael, again, for taking the time, and congratulations on completion of your master's.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking to you with you, and I must say, the East Coast, I'm a little jealous of your Vancouver weather, that's for sure.